Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Infratil Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason Boyes, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Bernadette, and kia ora tātou. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining on a Friday morning. I hope you're safe and well wherever you are. I'm Jason Boyes, the CEO of Infratil, and I'm joined by Phillippa Harford, our wonderful CFO, and also Vimal Vallabh, who's Morrison & Co.'s Global Head of Energy. We're here to discuss our announcement this morning that Infratil has established Gurīn Energy, a business that will develop renewable energy projects, that's wind and solar farms, in Asia. Everyone knows that Infratil loves renewable energy businesses, and they're good for the planet. It's a growing space, and it's been some of our most successful investments. We recently sold our investment in Tilt Renewables for $2 billion, just to give you a sense of that. Establishing Gurīn in Asia is really exciting. It means we'll have truly global reach in this space, as it'll sit alongside our renewable businesses in USA and Europe. That's Longroad and Galileo. And we see these companies as essentially future Tilts in the making. So what are we going to do? I'll introduce the investment and why we're doing it, and then I'll hand it over to Vimal to talk about Gurīn itself. He's very close to that. And then actually, before we go to questions, I'll talk a bit about the global business and global footprint that Infratil's developing and try and put this in context. And then there'll be opportunities for questions at the end. There's an announcement and presentation we've got up on the NZX and ASX that we'll refer to a little bit on the way through, or you can have a look at later. And this will be recorded, so it'll be on the website later if you want to go back to it. So let me begin. What at a high level is happening? So Gurīn Energy is structured very similarly to Longroad and Galileo. We're committing funding, and the total envelope is $233 million US, to enable the team at Gurīn to acquire and develop renewable energy projects in Asia. $133 million of that envelope is cash that they draw down as they need it and pay it back when they don't. And then $100 million is in support for bank guarantees, essentially, that get issued to third parties to enable us to develop these projects. It's almost identical, really, to the Longroad and Galileo structures we've liked in the past. Like Longroad, the Gurīn Energy team comes actually almost fully formed already. It's a team that we've lifted out of their prior business, which was called Syndicatum. There are about 30 of them across Southeast Asia, with the head office in Singapore, and it's led by their CEO, Asad Razouk. Vimal and I and the rest of the team have been working with Asad for actually over a year now, putting this together, and a little bit that's a reflection of the times. You know, it's harder to do these deals in a pandemic than it used to be, but it means we've been able to grow a really strong relationship already to get us going a lot quicker. And we're really excited today to welcome them to the Infratil family. As a team, you'll see from the presentation and where Vimal runs us through, they've successfully developed many megawatts across the region. And he'll talk to that in a second. But why don't I go to the next slide, slide four, if you're following online, and just talk a little bit about why we're doing this. So Infratil, fundamentally, we talk about focusing on ideas that matter, and we sort of have three major themes at the moment in the portfolio. But contributing to decarbonizing the global energy supply is one of the big ones we've been focused on for many years now, via mainly our businesses that develop wind and solar farms around the world, and this fits obviously nicely into that. Decarbonisation and developing renewable energy projects is a huge investment opportunity globally, one of the hugest ever. And adding Gurīn Energy in Asia will mean that Infratil's businesses are addressing the US, Europe and Asia. In those markets, the majority of renewable development will occur over the next decade. So we're capturing a lot of the potential build that can happen. We've been doing a lot in this space for a long time, but a lot of people are obviously entering it more recently. And what we've learned through that is that two of the big keys to success in the future will be scale and diversification. Through Gurin, addressing Asia obviously covers more countries than we have in the past, but also countries where electricity demand is growing much faster than in the US and Europe, which our current businesses address. There's actually a process of electrification, let alone decarbonisation, that's happening in those economies. And that'll mean renewable development in those countries is less reliant on policies to support renewable energy build like it is in the US and Europe. So much more diversification added through adding Asia. And then scale, just the sheer size and cadence of development will be really important in the future to get the best deals from global suppliers of turbines and solar panels, and just learning quickly and investing and learning quickly about new technology that's coming faster and faster. So expanding Infratil's global development business in this way obviously contributes to scale as well. So that's it from me for a little bit. I might hand over to Vimal on the line, and he'll talk a little bit more about the Gurin team in particular.
Hi, and thank you, Jason, for that. So we're very excited about the opportunity to expand our geographical reach. It, as Jason mentioned, gives us that additional geographical diversification to pursue projects in markets that are attractive, and as these markets mature, we're able to deploy capital into them against the backdrop of supportive policy. So we split Asia into three key components. Like our other platforms, we do look for policy and regulatory diversification, and divided into three regions as part of our strategy: North Asia, India, and Southeast Asia. And the team has been working in that region for quite some time, which has been a key criteria for us as we scan the market for an entry point. They've had over a decade working together, again, which is quite important to us, and have strong connectivity into the local markets and experience there. And that is important, particularly in Asia, as it's still emerging on the renewables front. One of the key, or one of the more interesting aspects of finding a team, high-caliber team like this, is their focus on ESG and the importance and emphasis they place on that. And so over the past 12 months, as we've worked closely with them in putting this platform together, have been quite impressed with the approach they take on that. I mean, ESG is of importance to all our sectors, but particularly in this region that has some challenges that need to be addressed in that space, which we are addressing directly in this platform. Our initial market focus, we've got pipeline, we've got about 2 gigawatts of pipeline that we're working through at the moment. Focus at the moment in the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, and Japan. We are looking to grow that pipeline, and it should, given the size and scale of the market opportunity, be equivalent to the European and Asian markets over the next decade. And we expect to be able to pull out, operate or build out projects at a similar rate to what we have seen in Australia over the last 5-6 years and North America in that market. So Asad, Michael and Bob Driscoll, who are the C-suite executives in this business, have worked together for quite a long time, all heavily steeped in the industry, well over 40 years working in the sector, so have quite a deep understanding and have been part of the transition story for the past 20 years. that's probably all I've got on the team for now, Jason, and I can happily address further questions towards the end of the call.
Thanks, Vimal. That's a nice summary, and there's some more information in the pack for people who want to drill into it. And yeah, happy to take questions at the end. Let me spend a little bit of time before we go to that on giving a sense of the global platform that InfraTool has now assembled and what that should mean from an investment perspective. And we've got there on slide 9, you know, a map that makes that very evident. And the thing to emphasize here, I think, is that the areas that we're addressing are going to be the areas where the majority of renewables are developed over the next decade. And it's great to have added Asia now to address a part now that will be growing, as Vimal said, as quickly as we've seen in the other markets we've already entered. And remember that we think scale and diversity are super important in the future to consistent development rates at attractive margins, which should turn up for InfraTool investors in significantly higher valuations and investment returns. And so we're trying to illustrate here how you could think about that. On slides 10 and 11, we've given some updates on Longroad and Galileo's progress over the year so far, which should give you a sense of the real diversity and scale already in the portfolio in a way that's actually a little hard to see from afar. So Longroad has finished 500 megawatts of construction this year so far, and there's some nice projects of huge, the size of those projects and how huge they are. Actually, in the US at the moment, one of the big themes is logistics and how much of a headwind that can be to development in the short term, just as the world comes out of the pandemic and supply chains are stressed. Fortunately for us, this year is actually a slower development year than others, so better to be lucky than good. But I think it does demonstrate that diversity in this space is really important, you know, that some of these themes will be global, some of them will pop up in some places at one time and not in others. So the diversity is really going to help us. On 11, we talk about Galileo. There's a nice picture of them there, one of our partners at EMP in Ireland at one of the sites. Looks like a windy day, I think. But you can see from that summary, when you get a chance to have a look at it, that the team is already addressing nearly 10 markets across Europe, very diversified approach, and a lot of sifting through lots of projects and lots of markets to find the attractive ones at any given time without necessarily being overcommitted to one particular market. And that is really a characteristic of our approach, very flexible, which enables us, we think, to achieve differentiated returns and more consistent outturn than some who are very committed to particular markets and producing megawatts rather than returns. On slide 12, we've tried to kind of summarize all that activity a bit more graphically so it's easier to see. And what this should be showing across the top and the pie chart is how diversified all that activity is by different types of technology, whether it's solar, combined solar and battery, wind, et cetera, and actually across different regions now. And we should expect as Galileo continues to ramp and Gurin ramps, that diversity will increase even more. Along the bottom there, we're showing how Gurin and Galileo should very quickly actually replace the pipeline, you know, the numbers of potential projects that the platform as a whole is addressing, and replace where Tilt was operating just before we sold it. So we're rebuilding, I guess, the stock of potential projects on the shelf, but in a much more diversified way. Remember, Tilt was focused on essentially one market. On the next slide, what we're trying to show is that all of this should turn into a more predictable outturn of development projects over time, and so a more predictable growing EBITDA profile that is easier for people to value. And we've used Longroad as a specific example. It's a bit more developed, plus it has a history we can look at. Across the top, we're showing the megawatts they've developed over the years, and you can sort of get a sense from that, you know, 400 or 500 megawatts have been reasonably consistently added over the last few years. Actually, they've built more, but they've sold a lot of that. And we've shown on the right how, you know, adding another 400 over the next year, as expected, would impact that. what that turns into in the graph at the bottom is an EBITDA growth profile. And what we're showing there is how consistent that addition or growth of EBITDA should become as Longroad pivots to retaining these projects rather than selling them. You can see in those previous years, those light pink bars, quite lumpy development gains as projects are sold. But on the right-hand side, we're sort of showing how simply by retaining those projects, you can end up with a pretty consistent EBITDA growth rate. And we're using metrics there that are pretty consistent with the existing portfolio and how it's run before. Another thing we're showing on the right in that pie chart is something we've not talked much about before, but is the highly contracted nature of the revenues from those projects once they're built. You know, we're over 90% contracted once they're built over a reasonably long period of time. So that's an interesting new metric for people to have a look at. And then lastly, on slide 14, what we're showing there is sort of a rough comparison of Longroad's independent valuation that Infratil gets every year, remember, and the metrics out of the Tilt sale that I talked about before. Now, these sorts of comparisons are notoriously hard. I'm not pretending this is perfect at all, but we believe the trend is correct. On the left, we're showing the EBITDA to EV multiple implied by Longroad's independent valuation. And on the right-hand side, we're showing more or less the same metric for the Tilt sale, which is obviously significantly higher. And one of the reasons for this is that the Longroad independent valuation only includes 1 year of development. So assuming we develop more projects for 1 year and then develop essentially no more. But what we see globally and in the Tilt sale is that people are willing to value multiple years of development for high quality businesses. And we think Longroad and the global platform like we have developed and are developing could be thought of in the same way, and it currently isn't. So people can have a think about that, and hopefully that's a helpful demonstration of what we've been talking to the market about for most of this year in this space. So thank you for your patience on that slight divergence. But to sum up before we go to questions, Infratil is committed to the renewable energy development space, and Gurin extends that commitment to Asia. Gurin's an established team on the ground and experience in Asia, as Vimal said. Asia will add diversity and further scale alongside our existing investments in Longroad and Galileo, and we couldn't be happier to be announcing this today. So I'll leave it there, and I'll hand it back to you, Bernadette, if there are any questions before we finish up.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Phil Campbell of UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, guys. I was just curious, maybe for Vimal, just how you went about selecting the new team at Gurin. I'm assuming, you know, people is probably quite important in the renewable space. So just be interested in the kind of due diligence or, you know, the process you went through in selecting the team and kind of how the new team kind of stacked up compared to, you know, even, you know, people at Tilt or Longroad or Galileo.
Yeah,
sure.
Good question. Thanks, Phil. Good morning.
Vimal,
do you want to have a go at that?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. It's quite a long process, to be frank. I mean, we start these things years in advance and monitor the market, see who's doing what in what country, talk to the various teams, get a sense of how the approach they take into these markets. In the case of this particular platform, as opposed to the others that we've done, there was a particular emphasis on ESG. Having spent a bit of time out in those markets, we see some of the challenges in navigating that part of it. And so that was quite a focus for us when we talk to various teams that are out there. And then we do fairly deep dives on the management teams and get external advisors to help us with that. And then we try and cut a deal. And that's more or less the process.
Great. Can you just go into...
prior to the selection of the team, we do a fairly aggressive and deep analysis of the markets to ensure that we are setting ourselves up for success.
That's awesome. Would you just be able to give us a little bit more explanation on the ESG component you were talking about? Is that slightly different in Asia compared to some other markets? Or?
Well, yes and no. They're just different. So, you know, there are peculiarities in these markets around governance, about slave labour, around safety, and how that's managed. Different countries, different standards. Probably some countries not necessarily the same standards that we would expect with our other businesses in other markets. But the real positive about this team is that they've worked in other markets before they started working in Asia. So they carry across some of the very stringent levels of ESG requirements that we have into Asia and do differentiate themselves in the market to a lot of the other players, I found.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Neville Gluyas of Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning, team. Hopefully you can hear me.
Hey, Neville.
Great. Several questions from me. Maybe to start off with, just in terms of the Asian renewables market, I guess we're less familiar with that clear renewable drives in Europe and US and maybe a more disparate market here. I just wonder if you can give us any colour in terms of buyers of renewable power and the drivers for invest there. What is the colour of that? Is it government-led? Is it sort of carbon pricing-led? And what is the average size of those projects? We expect them to be a little bit smaller, which I think is sort of what we expected in the case of Europe compared to the US. Any colour you can add there?
Sure. So one of the characteristics of the Asian market is it is far more disparate than what we experience in Europe, North America, and Australasia. So obviously each country sets its own policy. There's a lot less interconnectivity between the markets and no common policy set between the markets. So we do take a slightly different approach and do it more through JDAs. Or a focus on JDAs, joint development agreements, I should say, in these markets.
Right.
But one of the key characteristics I think Jason started with or mentioned it at the beginning of the call is say the average household consumption of power in a lot of these markets compared to, you know, what we're used to in North America or Europe is probably a fifth of the average household consumption in most of these in the markets that we're used to. So that's one growth aspect that's happening. So as wealth accumulates in these markets, so does the consumption of power. That's one thing. Second thing is the economies are growing. So there's more industrial demand for power, for energy, I should say. A lot of these markets are net short indigenous sources of energy and hence are importers. So being able to transition from importation of fuels for energy sources to developing their own indigenous energy in the form of electricity is another characteristic that we find quite attractive. So it's a net growth market for energy. And as Jason mentioned, that energy consumption also translates to electrification of both industry and commerce over time. And they are skipping a lot of the fossil fuel build-up that you would have seen otherwise, because
right.
they will benefit from the investment in the technology, well, wind and solar technology that, you know, Europe and North America have done over the last 15 years. Does that answer the question?
But- Okay. No, that's very useful color, thanks. Just to follow on that, in terms of renewable development, it, generally in these economies, or these jurisdictions, are wind farms and renewable projects generally cheaper than the carbon alternative? Is there a reason to select renewable over carbon intensive?
Yes and no. So some of these markets subsidise fossil fuels, but that is starting to come off. And as those subsidies come off, then these technologies can compete directly with fossil fuels in most markets globally now. We've seen the capital costs come down quite dramatically. A slight spike in the last 12 months caused by logistical disruptions, as Jason mentioned, but overall fairly competitive if it's on a compared on a like-for-like basis.
Okay, so the support that comes from a JDA doesn't have to be too large to justify that use of renewable.
No, not at all. I mean,
great.
It's somewhat akin to some of these countries going from no telecommunications to mobile phones without having to put the copper in the ground. It's quite similar, right? So. They are still building coal in these markets. It's one of the few markets left in the world that coal is being built in. But even that's starting to come off, and I expect to see a lot less of it there.
Great colour, thank you. So if I just sort of jump up a level in terms of the portfolio, I guess we've got three, the map is starting to get coloured with Infratil colours everywhere. Are there other jurisdictions on the horizon in the next year or two? Africa or elsewhere?
I don't think in that time frame, Neville, but certainly in the future. As I said, the next decade it's going to be in these markets, but you'll want to be getting set in those other markets assuming they reach a similar stage. So I don't think we'd rule it out, but we're not in a hurry to enter another market just yet.
Great, thank you.
It is a global sector, though, right? And it will contribute to the level.
I presume there are opportunities to share learning between the ventures as well.
Plenty, and we even saw that between Silton. Yeah,
right.
We saw that already between Silton and Long Road. We were using the same Vestas turbines where Tilt dropped a blade, and we had different issues. So there's plenty to be shared. I mean, actually, on panel prices is a really interesting one where they're all sharing different inputs and having. A team on the ground in Asia really close to the source of a lot of those panels will be quite helpful.
Great. A little bit unusual, I guess, in sort of 95% shareholding, a bit higher than the others. Is that something you might look at later? I mean, if it's a roaring success, would you think of selling down to the 51% level?
We would, always. We do like to have control, or at least negative control. I think we've got an option for them to step up to 10%, which I'd be very surprised if they didn't. And we had the same mechanism, if you remember, in Long Road. I think they started at 10 and went to 20. It's a really good way and a nice signal when that happens. So, yeah, we're not looking for partners in this one yet, but certainly management or someone else who adds something to any of the platforms is always welcome.
Great, thank you. And then flipping, I guess, to your last few slides, some interesting information there. I guess I imagine this is hard to unpick, but one of the things that the charts on page 13 suggests, a much greater share of operating EBITDA once you remove the project development costs and the project EBITDA. And obviously you're sort of pointing us towards tilt multiples to have a think about that valuation. I guess one of the difficulties here is what's the level of debt associated with that, and is that disentangleable from the debt associated with the in-progress projects?
Yeah, I agree. That is definitely one difference from tilt. That is hard to unpick. We've given some metrics there because we've got the EV, and you can see the equity value in our book. So once you get a chance to pick through that, that'll give you a sense of it as well. The other thing that we've drawn out here, which has been harder to unpick, in the past is on 13, we've got the development costs in each of those years, which in Longroad is included in the EBITDA, but tended to capitalise all of that. So that's another little Easter egg hidden in there for you.
Good fun. That's all for me. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the questions.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Aaron Johannes Ibbotson of Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Good morning. Hopefully you can hear me. I've actually got a slightly sort of different line of question. After your Tilt experience, I wondered if with Longroad, but I guess more broadly, you had sort of considered maybe holding on to a little bit more and selling a little bit less. You know, is there a way where that could work gearing-wise, where you would keep a bit more to build up a more higher level of operating assets quicker? And secondly, you know, when we think about long-term or exit, you talk to the multiples you achieved for Tilt, et cetera. You know, what is a good sort of size to think about when you think an asset is ready to be potentially exited or sold? You know, obviously Longroad is further along, but, you know, 5 gigawatts, you know, how big should we think about these assets becoming before you would consider exiting? Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. I can talk to those. So Longroad is essentially looking to retain more of the projects that it develops now. And I think the way these businesses are now being valued, which Tilt demonstrates, but is by no means the only example, shows that what we might have thought of as a bit of a drag on returns through holding lower risk operating assets is not necessarily the case, because it enables people to value more years forward of development in a way. So yes, we should expect that, I think, from Longroad in the future. And then in terms of exit, we don't really have a size trigger. It's not the way we think about divestment of assets. We will usually sell really when we think the growth has tailed off, our view of growth, I should say, has tailed off below where others are willing to pay. And that was really what we saw until it was a more difficult near-term environment for an independent developer than we thought others might pay. And it turns out, I think, you know, it's gone to the perfect place to deal with the risk we saw in a consortium that includes AGL, who holds the kind of big lever in that market, being the ability to write revenue contracts for the project. So that's more the test for us. I think these are really long themes in these markets. So, you know, divestment, I can't see divestment really being in our minds at all. In our mind more, and what we're trying to signal in here, is the potential to create a kind of global business through having these all together rather than, you know, thinking them as separate pockets that you would deal with separately. That's a potential option Infratil's created for itself by doing it this way. So that's how we're thinking about growing this thing rather than divesting it.
Okay, perfect. Good answer, thank you. You've given some additional disclosure here, which is really appreciated. But as Galileo and, you know, starts to ramp up, this Gurin as well, I wondered, you know, would you consider, you know, presenting this on a consolidated way, presenting the information in a consolidated way, you know, similar to how we would normally think about these assets, i.e., for instance, capitalizing or just illustrative purposes, not capitalizing, the development costs, etc. You know, this is, you know, when you look at realizing value for your platform, it's quite difficult to sort of see how that's going to happen with these quite opaque disclosures.
Yeah, that is actually our intention, is to start showing, rather than components, the whole, because what we should be able to show through that is, I think, more confidence in a development cadence, because you're just drawing from a much bigger pot. And then we should be able to average what that turns into in terms of value. I think there's quite a bit there about that DevEx that we haven't been able to show before that should help with your development expenditure point, but always happy to take requests from anyone on useful ways to present this information. But I think our objective is to move to a consolidated InfraTool view and then answer questions on specific platforms if people want it.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. That's all from me.
Cheers, Aaron.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Lance Reynolds of AAML. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Congratulations on the announcement today. Just got a question on slide 14. You've got an illustrative example there in the darker shade, pink or purplish or violet, where it's got 400 megawatts developed at a retained $70,000 US per megawatt. Just to help us to get around that math, could you indicate what average build cost is per megawatt, or what your expectations of the range would be?
Yep. Vimal, what do you reckon? US, mostly solar now, right?
Yeah, again, it depends. $1,100 is probably a kilowatt is off the cuff, but it very much depends on market. And, you know, in the US it can be down to county and state because of labor and construction costs. So, but, you know, $1,100 a kilowatt, there or thereabouts.
Okay. So we should
maybe a range is better, as 880, 900 to 1300 is probably the better way to think about it.
Okay, no, that's helpful. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Across the portfolio.
Yeah. Thanks.
Great. No worries.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Boyes for closing remarks.
Perfect. Thanks, Bernadette, and thanks, everyone, for the questions. We're really happy to be announcing this today. Just a small historical note. Many of you will know Lloyd was really keen on Asia and investing there, and I think it'll be a dream come true for him to have seen us initiating that today, which is really nice for Morrison & Co. and I think InfraTool and people who've followed it for a number of years. So we'll finish there. I'm happy to take questions as usual afterwards and hopefully talk again soon. Thanks, operator.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.